Gardening tips on Basingstoke Radio with the garden editor, Claire.
Community connections with me, Dave, on Basingstoke Radio. It is Tuesday and it is time for Claire, the garden editor. Good morning to you, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you keeping?
I'm all right, thank you. Good week so far. I know it's only Tuesday,
yes.
But did you have a good week last week?
Oh yeah, well it's March, isn't it? So last week I literally wore shorts and t-shirts one day for one
Really?
job, and then the next day I was in full rain gear. So it's very much March weather, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because last Wednesday was quite nice, wasn't it? And then Thursday it went a bit downhill, or was it? I can't remember.
I think
Days been
Thursday was
based.
nice. And then, well, I can't remember, but what we need to know as gardeners is March is changeable, and we'll have these lovely weekends. We think, oh, spring is here and it's lovely. And then you'll have another weekend, a bit like we had last weekend, where it's all misty and grey and everyone feels a bit grumpy. But fear not, spring is coming, but progress is never linear. And it's the same with our weather in March. We can expect all sorts of things. So don't be disheartened. Enjoy the nice weather and just hold on to it, and then ride through the rain and the wind and
And
the snow we might get, or hail, things like that.
Mind you, I did read on the interweb, that's what I call it. I did hear that we were meant to be having a Sahara dust cloud come over Hampshire this week, sometime this week.
Well, I've not yet seen it.
I hope
But
not. Means
it's
we're going to
not
clean the
unimpo-
top.
yes, we do get this occasionally, and normally it's when the weather has picked up a lot of dust, as I say, from the Sahara, and it's been held in the cloud formations and then dumped on our nice little wet island. So I'll look forward to the car cleaning after that one. But yeah, I always just think it's a reminder that we are, genuinely connected around the world. And we might think, everything is small and little, but we're really very interconnected. That sand has travelled, hundreds of
Hundreds of
miles
miles,
to
that's right,
end
yeah.
up dumped on my
That's right, on the car.
my
And
very dirty
if you
car.
do find it on your car, don't just wipe it off with your hand. Make sure you do it with water, or just scratch it, and that's the last thing you want. Because
Listen to Dave on that
the
one. You
wife
sound
would
like you
not
have
be
knowledge.
happy. Trust me, the wife would not be happy. Anyway, Claire, today we've got a Q&A session, haven't we? We've got five, six
We have.
questions, I think.
Yeah, we've got loads of questions. So thank you first off for everyone who's got in contact and sent in questions. There's been so many. We might even do another one in a couple of weeks' time, because I know this is a really key point for people getting out there, and we'd love to help as many as possible.
That's
So
right.
should we kick off first off? The first question is from Mary in Hatchwarren.
Yeah, let's do that.
Lovely. So Mary's question is a good one. When is the safe date to start planting out tender crops like tomatoes and dahlias in Basingstoke? Mary, this is a cracking question. So we have in the UK, we have plants which can quite happily live all year round outside, and those are called hardy plants. Then we have plants which live indoors all the year round, and those are kind of like tropical plants that we have as house plants. And then we have things which are called half hardy plants, and these are ones which can cope when we don't get a frost. So if we don't get a frost, a lot of plants will cope, these half hardy plants, and these include things like tomatoes. Now, when is the last safe date is a real bit of a it's a slight bit of an art and science. Because everyone says plant out after the last frosts have passed. And how are you going to know in advance when the last frost will be, Dave? I just don't understand how we can do that. What I can give you is the previous weather that we've had and what I use as my rough planting dates. So here, I would typically start to plant out half-hardy plants like tomatoes at the end of April. The reason being is although it feels warm and, so I've been out there in shorts and t-shirt, we still can have some quite severe frosts. We still can have snow in April. And what you don't want to be doing is giving those plants a shock. What you can be doing is, if your tomatoes are growing and getting quite leggy, you can pot them up into a bigger pot, and you can start to harden them off, which is putting them outside for a few hours and then bringing them in. With plants like dahlias, there's a couple of things. They are a bit hardier than half-hardy crops, but what they don't like is winter wet. So if you've left them in the ground over winter, which I have, I've still got them covered up with a bit of mulch, and I'll leave that probably until mid-April, will you start to see the shoots. If you're growing them from tubers, or if you've raised your tubers, again, I'd be thinking end of April, because, and we'll come on to this as another question, it's all about slug management with dahlias as well. So I would treat late April as your last, as your safe time to start planting out from. But as I say, the weather is unexpected and we know things can change. And if you are, I've got seeds and things growing on, just keep potting them up and keep putting them outside for a few hours in the meantime. But I hope, Mary, that helps you. It's a great question, and we'll see what the latest safe date will be this year and add it to our tally.
Absolutely. There you go, Mary. So just remember, after you've eaten all your Easter eggs, all the chocolate's gone, you can then do your planting of tomatoes, can't you? Because that's
Yes, I can't even remember when Easter is it? I think
it's. I
Easter's
think it's
about
the
the third of April, third or
yes,
fourth of
it's
April.
first. Yeah,
So,
the first weekend of April.
yeah,
So after you've eaten
that's
all
right.
your Easter eggs, not just that.
Yes.
Well, unless you eat them all in one day, I suppose.
Yes, yeah.
Oh
So if you
dear.
do that, still, and again, the Easter bank holiday weekend is a lovely weekend to start thinking about things. So just keep an eye on those temperatures and keep an eye. But yeah, should we move on to our next question then?
Yeah, this is
Yeah.
it, Brian?
This is a question. Yeah, this is from Brian in Popley.
Hello,
Brian
Brian.
asks, with the summers becoming hotter and drier, which drought-tolerant plant actually
Does he live in
thrives?
Basingstoke, does he? Because
Well,
they
he lives
don't
in
become hotter
Popley.
and drier in Basingstoke.
Well, it did. Remember
Sorry,
last summer?
Brian.
I know it's
Sorry, I
very
had to say
hard.
that. Sorry.
But Brian is right. Our summers are getting hotter and drier. But what's happening is our winters are getting warmer and wetter. So we might be feeling like we're living under mud half the year, but our summers are getting hotter and drier. And Brian asks about what drought-tolerant plants actually thrive in typical UK clay or sandy soils. This is a great question, because a lot of plants which we think of as Mediterranean style plants won't survive in a UK clay soil. And that is because clay holds onto the winter wet a lot. So if you've been sloshing around in mud in your back garden for the last 3 months, you're likely to have a clay soil. And clay is very fertile, but it holds onto the winter wet and then it dries like concrete in the summer. So if you have clay, you're going to want to think about things like roses, nepetas, the catmint. Don't try and grow lavender, but grow nepeta, a really good alternative. Rudbeckias, which are those really, really big perennial sunflowers and things like that, they will totally cope with that dried concrete style soil in the summer. And asters, Michaelmas daisies, also really good for clay. If you have a sandy soil, and as we know, we've all gone to the beach before, and what happens if you pour a bucket of water over the sand? What happens?
Well, it
Just
goes a
drains
bit,
away, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Well, yeah, and
Yeah.
it just gets a bit wet and cloggy, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't sit there, does it? Like we do
Oh,
on the
no.
dog walks around Basingstoke. Yeah.
No.
So if you've got a sandy soil, it's going to be free draining year round. And that means it won't have this winter wet, but it will be very, very dry and very, very drought in the summer. So if you have a soil like this, you're going to want to look at things like Potentilla, Cistus, Senecio. You can look at the lavenders. They will thrive in those things. The mallows, Artemisia. So more of that Mediterranean style planting will suit a sandier soil because that is what typically we see around the Mediterranean. We don't see these big clay patches. So Brian, that's a very rough canter through. You're very welcome to ask any further questions because if you've got questions about shade or sunny plants, we can go into that. But think about how they cope in the winter as well as in the summer is the key point for our climate resilient planting.
Well, there you
It was a
go.
great question. Yeah.
Good question there, Brian. I think we're going to move on to Molly and Dan. Is it Molly and Dan from Newbury?
That's right, Molly
Thanks
and
for
Dan in
listening, you
Newbury.
guys. Thank you very
Thank
much.
you so much for tuning in. It's great that we're kind of going round almost like a radius around Basingstoke. The power of Basingstoke Community Radio is spreading around the planet. And Molly and Dan are asking, how can we transform our traditional lawn into a more biodiverse space without it looking messy or neglected? So quite often we like a lawn. Lawns are great for all sorts of things, for kids, for dogs, for sitting, entertaining, but they are what's called a monoculture. And if we trim them very, very closely, it means nothing else is going to grow apart from grass. And grass is fine, but it doesn't feed our pollinators, doesn't do much for our wildlife, doesn't do much for our birds, for our hedgehogs, for all sorts of species. So if you want to make it more biodiverse without it looking like a complete dump, there's a couple of things you can do. First of all, you can do different levels of mowing of your lawn. So you can have some areas very, very cropped, and then you can have some a bit longer, and you can leave some as long as you like. What this does, it gives different insects in particular, different spaces and niches in which to live. So 75% of a baby hedgehog's diet is made up of caterpillars which grow on tall grass. I did not know this fact. It's fascinating. I'm going to repeat that. 75% of a baby hedgehog's diet is made up of caterpillars who live on long grass.
Bit
So
boring though,
leave
isn't
some
it?
long grass. It's amazing.
Bit
Yeah.
boring. Yeah, it's a bit boring eating caterpillars all day.
I know, but then let's think about our pets. They just eat the same thing every day, don't they? And,
Yeah, fair
it's
point.
just, it's caterpillars for us, for hedge, what are they called? Hoglets, aren't they? Baby hedgehogs.
Are they?
Yes, they are indeed. Hoglets, I
Oh,
think, is
okay.
the
That's
name for
something
them.
else I've learned. I must write that down. Hoglet.
There'll be a test later on. So experiment, Molly and Dan, with different levels of of mowing your lawn and see what happens, because you'll have all sorts of plants which grow up. You'll have daisies, you'll have things with pollinators. You can also add in bulbs to a lawn, and this is a really cheap way to do it. I would do it in the autumn when you can get cheap bulbs. You can add things like Camassias. You can add things like Sicilian garlic honey, which is chock full for bees and butterflies, but self seeds and goes beautifully. You could even think, if your lawn you want to have birds in your garden, you could even cut out a circle of your lawn in the middle and put a tree in. Birds need somewhere to roost, they need somewhere to nest, they need somewhere to kind of hop to and fro. And if you have a flat lawn, a very exposed lawn, it's very hard for birds to feel, many garden birds to feel safe crossing that. So you can add in a tree or a shrub. So there's lots of things you can do without it making looking like you just haven't been bothered. With all these things, just do it with intention. So if you are cutting the lawn different length, just make it really bold, make it really obvious, and just explain to people what you're doing, and people are understanding, I think. So see, I hope there's a few ideas you can play with, Molly and Dan, and let us know how you get on.
Good question that.
Great question.
Yeah, I
Right.
like the idea of leaving it to grow. That's what I like the idea of.
Yes, there's something called No Mow May, and I think a lot of people leave parts of the gardens, and we're seeing increasingly in churchyards, for instance,
Yeah.
and the council leaving wildlife
They leave
verges
all year,
because it
don't they?
means lots of other things can do. Yes, I mean, there is a money saving advantage for the council to doing that as well, I think it's fair to say. I don't
Don't
think
get me
they'd be so
started on the
keen on
hedges. Don't get me started on the hedges.
it.
Right, we're moving over
Okay.
to now next one. Next, oh, he's great name, this one. Dave in Basingstoke. It's not me actually, but great name. Well done, Dave.
Well done,
That's
Dave. Yeah.
the next question, although it's not me.
Are you sure this is not you?
I'm
Okay.
positive.
Right. Dave is asking a very timely question. What is the most effective peat-free and chemical-free ways to manage slugs and snails in a damp British garden? Now, I can hear everyone already clenching their teeth here, because 2 years ago we had a very wet spring and it meant that it was slug-ageddon. And do you remember we basically did slug therapy, I think, for
Yeah, I
many of
think
our
we did.
listeners
Yeah, we
that
did.
year. And so the learning from that is there's a couple of things you can do. You absolutely don't need to use chemicals. The first thing is, the more wildlife you encourage into your garden, the less problems you will have with slugs and snails. So if you have a pond, you are likely to have frogs. Frogs eat slugs and snails for breakfast. If you have more birds, a lot of birds will eat snails, like they are some kind of gourmet. So the more you can do to encourage wildlife, the more you're less likely to have an overabundance of these things. The second thing to do is, as we discovered last year, a couple of years ago, beer traps are a very, very good way of catching slugs. Now, it does kill them, and you might violently oppose the idea of pouring beer and leaving it in traps around the garden. But it is very effective, and it is a good way of controlling the populations. But the thing you might want to do now, and you might want to note this down, is there are something called nematodes, and these microscopic worms that you can buy in powder form, and you put them in water and you literally hose it over your garden. And you do that when the daytime temperatures and the soil temperatures reach about 10 degrees. And it's about now, and you go onto websites. If you Google nematodes, Nematodes, or slugs, various suppliers will come out. You can order it now and it will be delivered when the temperatures have risen enough. And what those do is, those microscopic worms go down into the soil, live in the soil, and they, again, it's a bit gooey, they go into the bodies of the slugs and eat them from the inside out. But then they decompose naturally, goes back to the soil. So it's a little bit macabre, but it is chemical free. It is a natural, it's what's called a beneficial insecticide, a beneficial insect that we're introducing into our gardens to help mitigate and manage and kind of control various populations.
Do them
So
little worms eat anything
wildlife,
else?
yes. No, they don't.
They didn't like
No,
slugs,
you
do
see,
they?
that's the thing. There's different types of nematodes for different types of cool microscopic worms for different things. So more wildlife, beer, or microscopic vampire eating worms. That's your choices. But David from Basingstoke, obviously with the best name in Basingstoke, I hope that helps. Let us know how you get on. It depends. We might get a dry summer like a dry spring like last year. But it's best to be prepared if you do feel that you are likely to suffer from slug infestations.
We'd
So I
always
hope
get
that
them
helps.
climbing up the front door for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow, what's on your front door? That's
I don't know. Maybe they just like it.
quite
I don't know.
impressive.
Yeah, I mean, not all the time, but every now and again there'd be a little
No.
slug there, and you think, I don't know how you got there. Anyway,
No,
well
indeed,
done,
indeed.
Dave. Yeah, it's good. That's a good question there. I personally wouldn't use the beer because there wouldn't be none left. I do like the
It
idea of the vampire worms. That sounds quite good fun. Anyway,
is quite good fun.
we got one more, and it's from let's have a look, Charlotte. Charlotte in
Yeah, that's
Oakridge.
right. That's right. Charlotte from Oakridge is going to close our show. And Charlotte asks a great question, which is very pertinent for this time of year, really. What are the best high-value crops to grow in a small garden in Basingstoke to help offset rising food costs? The cost of living is still biting, isn't it? Costs are not really coming down. We're all worried about how we're going to feed ourselves and our families and our loved ones. And so growing your own can be a good way of kind of mitigating those costs. So I'm just going to repeat my normal advice. It just grow what you like to eat. There's
However,
no
I
point growing
can't
stuff.
grow Easter eggs or chocolate. I've
No, you can grow
tried. Yeah, I've.
chocolate-scented things,
Yeah, it's
but
not the same though, is it? It's
it's
not got
not
the
the
same
same, yeah.
texture. I have tried.
No,
And
we're not quite
I
yet.
haven't found the cheeseburger tree yet either. I'm still trying to grow that one.
Or
Sorry, I'm sorry. We're divert.
the
We're
spaghetti.
yeah. No, just spaghetti. No.
No,
Sorry.
okay. Yeah.
Sorry,
So yeah, so
Charlotte.
point one
Sorry.
is, sorry, Charlotte. So point one is grow what you like to eat, and two, grow what is expensive in the shops. So if you have a small garden, here's a couple of ideas.
Like
One,
vodka.
put in a couple of asparagus spears. Asparagus is incredibly expensive to eat to buy in the shops, but if you like it will take a couple of years to develop, but it's a really high value but takes up a tiny amount of space in your garden. That's one thing. Fruit is often at an extreme premium, particularly in the summer months, and you know you spend a fortune, you get a little plastic tub with about four berries in it. So things like gooseberries, raspberries can be quite small and contained in terms of your space, but provide a high amount of cropping potential, and you're not having to service them like annuals things. So it's, you know, it's quite a low effort to grow those type of things. With raspberries, the one thing I would say is they can take up quite a bit of space over time. So only plant one or two canes, but you will have plenty of raspberries all summer long. You can also, the other really cost-effective thing to do is to grow your own or to look after your own herbs on a windowsill. Herbs and spices in the supermarket cost an absolute fortune, and you get a tiny amount in a plastic pocket. Whereas, you know, you could buy a basil from your supermarket and you could look after it and crop it and crop it and come again. And it's a really good way of enhancing your food without costing very much at all. Whereas if you were buying that on a per every single time fresh, it would cost quite a bit of money. So asparagus, rhubarb is also another good one, but basically look at what you like to eat and what's really expensive to buy, and then kind of work backwards from that way. But things which are small and which don't take up too much of your time or your water, because you don't want to have a big water bill when you're trying to save money. So things which can cope well pretty much fairly neglected is what I would go for. So I hope, Charlotte, that helps you and gives you some ideas, and let us know how you get on.
There you go. Some good questions there, Claire. So a good range of questions as well.
A really good range of questions. So what we'll do is we'll probably open this, I think, maybe because there's quite a few, I think more people want to ask questions. So we'll open it again, shall we, and do another spring Q&A in a couple of weeks'
That's
time.
fine. Yeah, why not?
Great.
Yeah. So don't be shy if you've got a question about gardening, even if you
Please
think
do.
it's a silly question. It could be the most simplest question you just want, clarification on. Then do send it in. Send it an email. It's studio@basingstokecommunityradio.org.uk. Do that, and I will pass it on to Claire. And I'm sure Claire will come up with the answer in 2 weeks' time. Is that right?
Absolutely, and please do ask the questions. There was no stupid questions. I didn't grow up gardening. I've made so many errors, and just asking other people for some advice and sharing what's on your mind is a really helpful way of getting some ideas and hopefully helping you deal with any overwhelm or worries you may have. So please do get in contact. We'd love to hear from you.
Make sure you do that. And don't forget, make sure you follow Claire on all the social medias. What's your social media handle, Claire? Can you remember?
Oh, yeah, on Instagram, it's the_garden_editor. And on Facebook, it's Garden Editor. And you'll find me both those places.
There
I
you
need to
go.
put some more stuff up there. So I definitely
Simple.
will. I'll add some more things on there. And there's a newsletter and all sorts of bits and pieces. I was in The Guardian this week, actually, but I'll tell you about that another time.
Okay. Well,
Yeah.
rubbing shoulders with the
Oh.
rich and famous then,
Oh,
am I?
well, I don't know. It was about gardening kit to buy from the professional gardeners. So I was
Well,
very honored
okay.
to be featured in that. So yeah.
That's good. All right. Now, before we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks, but before you go, what's your song for today?
Oh, well, again, the sake of being a retro child yet again, we're back to the 90s, I'm afraid, Dave. And this time we're going with Four Non Blondes. We're going What's Up? Because what is going on? What is going on, Dave?
Thank you very much. Speak to you in 2 weeks.
Speak to you soon then. Bye-bye.
Gardening tips on Basingstoke Radio.